Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
June 28th, 2022, HRMC Commission meeting will now come to order. We will now have a roll call of the HRMC Commission member. Please say here after Ms. Cascio calls your name.
Glenn.
Here.
Lackawanna.
Yes.
Levinston.
Yeah.
Rodriguez.
Here.
Commissioner Stern is absent.
Good.
Taroski.
Here.
Templeman.
Here.
Elifson.
Here.
Thank you.
Very good. I understand there are several members of the public participating virtually today. We thank you for your interest in observing the meeting. There are a few reminders for today's meeting. Please keep your microphone on mute when not speaking. The audio of the meeting is being recorded for posting on our website. Before speaking, please state your name. Ms. Cascio will call commission names on a roll call vote on each agenda item requiring action. Only public comments pre-registered with Ms. Cascio will be accepted during the call. I understand there is one person registered for public comments today.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Going forward, we'll start off with the consent agenda. Sir Jay.
Mr. Chair, I haven't heard any questions or anything to be pulled off the consent agenda.
Okay. I haven't either. So with that, move. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you, Commissioner Lackawanna.
All those in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By a roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lackawanna?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elifson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Carries. Item two.
Good morning, Commissioners, Mr. Chair. A beautiful day in paradise again. Today is the second agenda item. It's the Capital Improvement Program Internal Labor for fiscal year 2023. It's the initial appropriation. The recommended action today is appropriate the total project funding in the amount of $3.6 million. If you recall, during the budget process, it's going to be the first year where we have moved all the capitalizable labor that's working on CIP projects into the CIP program to be paid out of kit pig of cash. And so, you know, as with the commission governance guidelines, this is the initial appropriation for this annual CIP that needs to be approved in June for a July 1st start. We had talked to the O&M committee this morning about modifying some of the commission governance guidelines, and this is one of the ones that we'd like to place on consent in the future.
Any questions? Move for approval, Glenn.
Thank you, Commissioner Glenn.
Taroski, second.
Thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lackawanna?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elifson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item three.
Item three. This is the 46th Street Diversion Sewer Rehabilitation Replacement for an additional appropriation contract award in task order. Recommended actions today are appropriate additional funding in the amount of $707,151. Award a contract to Tidewater Utility Construction in the amount of $9,419,297 and approve a task order with Bramble America Engineering Solutions in the amount of $770,850. If you recall, the commission approved an agreement with Huntington Ingalls a couple of months ago. In essence, we are taking gravity sewer off of the shipyard property and moving it into the public right of way. So this is another portion of that project to do that. So this is a lot of the construction work. To do this work, we've got some gravity sewer, sewer lateral rehab, a lift station, and a 2-inch force main, again, to divert that flow out of that shipyard property. So one of the themes for this month's commission meeting in terms of engineers' estimates and construction bids, I think our engineers are having a tough time dealing with escalation factors. Engineers' estimate was $6.3 million. Low bid came at $9.4 million. Again, primarily due to trying to not factoring in enough of cost escalation into their bids, specifically in this case for microtunneling, the lift station, and very deep gravity sewer, 14 to 16 feet.
So you'll kind of see that thematically going both directions in terms of comparing the engineer's estimate to the low bid. But we did get two bids and they were very close. So we're confident that the low bid makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm.
Any questions?
Or just a comment or a question. Any evidence that prices are leveling out or coming down at all?
I'd say they're at a kind of a peak spot. So like the bidders aren't getting prices until the very last minute from these folks. So they can't hold their price for any length of time. So our contractors will get a price from a pipe supplier and they'll say, well, it's good for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Well, they can't really order the pipe for a month or two by the time we get chop drawing through. So the contractor has to take great risk that price might or might not go up. So they're going to take that bid price and they're going to put on a safety factor on top of that because they know that when they actually have to put in their purchase order, prices might have gone up or down. So I think prices aren't going up a lot, but there still is a lot of worry on the contracting community on these types of risks. So they're being very careful and they have plenty of work. So there's no upside for them to be aggressive in their pricing at this point. You can see we only have two bidders on this project. So the economy is tight. There's a lot of work out there. So the general contractors are going to put a premium on their pricing, which is, I think, the engineer didn't account for that type of risk in these bids. And you'll see that going forward until the economy kind of flattens out, until there's enough work out there and they're getting more aggressive in the pricing. They can't predict the future of this form of the contractor. So they're going to put a nice cushion on the pricing.
Are we framing escalation clauses in our contracts, or are we letting the contractor assume all the risk?
We're making the contractor take all these risks at the same time. That's fine. Unless it's in the design build contract, right. And then we actually negotiate that ahead of time.
Yeah.
And then we share that risk.
All right, thanks.
Sure. Any other questions?
No.
Thank you.
One second.
Thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. I roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lakdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elison?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item four.
Item four, this is a conceptual project development for fiscal year 2023. It's a new CIP and an initial appropriation. So recommended actions today are approve this new CIP project and appropriate the total project funding in the amount of $213,000. You know, one of the things, you know, CIP is very near and dear to my heart, that planning portion, and we're staring down the next 10 years to spend over $3 billion. And so this pilot project is going to help us fine tune our capital planning. And so I've got Aaron Girardi to describe this pilot project.
Thanks, Jay. Good morning, commissioners. The CIP project is a result of a small internal team that was put together at the request of Jay. Members are on the call today, actually, Eddie Abasab from engineering, Chris Wilson from operations, and myself from finance. We were tasked to look at innovative ways to streamline CIP implementation, and to better align CIP budgeting and projecting with the actual execution of the CIP program. Many of our CIP projects change significantly from the first concept or the need identification to the actual project that is designed and implemented. These projects can vary significantly. Like a pump station many times is initially put into the CIP program as a rehab project. But then by the time it is designed and bid, it's oftentimes a full replacement of the pump station with architectural improvements and land purchase, et cetera. So this can cause significant challenges in the planning process and, you know, benchmarking our CIP, seeing how well we do from project initiation in the CIP to execution, difficulty in getting appropriate financing, difficulty in resource planning, et cetera. you know, the when the scope changes, that's the first domino to fall to cause kind of a cascading effect that differentiates our projection from our actual CIP implementation. So the question quickly became in our team, how do we get a better scope of our projects up front so that we can better plan? And what was decided was to take some potential CIP concepts that we had in the operating budget to do studies on. We're going to put those together in one CIP project. We're going to utilize our general engineering services contracts to get some consulting firms to look at these different studies. And there are a range of different studies. There's a pump station. The list is on the agenda item, but it's a good mix of plant and interceptor projects. We're going to do some initial work on these to determine the best scope of these projects and if they are worthy of becoming CIP projects. We want to find that out up front. So the deliverables we're expecting from this work are, one, a needs assessment up front. Really, is it a CIP project? We're going to look at some alternatives analysis to determine what is the best course of action for the project. We're going to charter the project, so have that initial baseline there that we can then compare against as the project develops. And then we'll be able to do what we think will be a better initial cost and schedule of the project before it even goes into the CIP. So what we'll have to do after we get these deliverables on these items is we'll track these projects over time to see if what we expect actually happens, that these projects don't change as much. We can track these, we can develop better metrics on these projects. You know, like Jay said on the previous project that was approved, we're hoping that starting with a better scope will allow a better engineer's estimate come time for bid. We won't have that deviation, but we're going to be tracking all these things and tracking them against similar projects we've done in the past to see how well this pilot comes together. So yeah, over time, we hope that we start with better projects and it allows us to do much better planning as our CIP grows and develops. So the cost of this project really is just a roll-up of the cost that were in the operating budget that we then took out and put into the CIP budget. So for a total appropriation request of $413,000. Any questions?
Yeah, Aaron, this is Mike Glenn, Commissioner Glenn. So are there any matrix that measure or standardizations that you will use to help you make these decisions?
So which decisions really?
Well, maybe I'm not understanding the process. So you plan on taking these funds and using them to work these projects through the system, through your process to determine whether they would be CIP candidates or not. Is that yes. Correct?
Yes, it's really going to be a series of workshops to identify the need, to then identify the best method for getting the best result, what the project really is going to look like, and then chartering the project. Yes.
How will you determine again what metrics or what procedures will you determine that put the one project into CIP or not?
Okay, so we have these projects will then funnel into our prioritization process. So we compare all projects against each other in terms of risk reduction and regulatory needs and, you know, various needs. So these will then just funnel in like our typical capital projects do, and we'll prioritize these. And the hope is that these projects just don't have that wide change that many of our projects have that calls for then a reprioritization or a determination if it is the same project as what was initially proposed. So we think doing this work up front will help us out on many fronts, including the prioritization of the projects.
So these five projects you are listed here, do you have kind of an educated guess right now which ones would or would not fall into?
We do not at this time. That's part of what we want to determine if they will even, if, you know, we hope that involving more people earlier in the process at CIP initialization will help us potentially weed out some projects that don't even make it into the CIP plan. We hope maybe we can come up with some innovative ways to address the issue without them becoming CIP projects potentially.
Yeah, it's not, so like you think about it in terms of stage gates, this first stage gate to even get into the CIP is not necessarily a quantitative matrix. It's more kind of like, yeah, we need to do this project, kind of like a gut call between people. So that's kind of what Aaron's talking about, to even get into the process, into the, be listed in the book, it's kind of like the first thing. So, but it's not like a matrix kind of gut call right now, generally. And meeting with a lot of people and director has to approve it. It's got stage gates, but it's not quantitative.
So how's that $450,000 spent? So the first stage I would guess would be internal. Everybody sit in the room, the department saying, hey, this needs to be in, okay, then it goes in, then or gets to the next stage. Then is a dollar amount, there's the scope of work, is it a combination, timing?
So I think where the 413 comes in, and that's where the consultant is gonna help us with some of the studies. To help us on the alternatives, got to do alternatives now. It's like you said, like whether it's a pump station, is it cost effective to reroute all the gravity system? Is there any available locations? You know what I mean? Just that kind of stuff to help us with that from a resource perspective.
So Jake, what is the driving force between both of these projects?
For each one, I think it varies for each one on why they're being looked at.
Are there issues with these at all now? Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like Plume Street is a pump station that's in the bottom of the building of HRSD's old headquarters on Plume Street. It's like, I think it's in the basement, right?
Yeah.
It's in the basement.
These are all projects that have problems. The office said there's a problem. And then we have to figure out whether it needs to be a CIP project. Maybe it's just a little bit of repair work that needs to be done. Okay. Maybe it needs to be a mega project. Maybe it can just go away. Maybe they can find a better way to resolve the problem. And just maybe we can divert flow around Plume Street and eliminate pump station. So those things aren't usually looked at up front. So Aaron and his team are going to be looking at that with a cross-departmental team to take a wider view of the issue, to see if we can come up with a better answer rather than finding out later in the game, oh my goodness, why didn't we think of that earlier? So they're trying to be a little more proactive.
So this would be an ongoing adding, taking one of the projects off the list and putting ones on the list as well. It's just kind of like, just these five and we're done.
Just these five, just see how it goes. Mm-hmm. See if this has value. Okay. Cause you're gonna lose a year on the project by studying this. Mm-hmm. If they find, well, they're all projects, we knew that to start with, why just spend a year to look at it? Then maybe we won't do that, or maybe they find a better answer and say maybe we should do this on every single project that goes into CIP.
Sounds like to me they're taking an in-depth look at these projects where we've gotten into them before thinking we needed to make a change or make some adjustments, and then finding out there's more to the project and a larger cost at a later date. It sounds like they're trying to get a handle on scope. Front door, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like there's lots of examples of where we've brought a project, it's gone into the CIP at, let's say, 15 million. When it's all said and done, it's like 65 million. Because like all those things kind of just like, oh yeah, we forgot we need to do this because it's tied to this. Oh no, while we're there, let's just do this. So.
Okay. Any other questions?
Move to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Rodriguez.
Second.
Thank you, Commissioner Livingston.
All those in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. I roll call.
Blend?
Yes.
Lakdawalla?
Yes.
Livingston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taurasi?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elofson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item 5.
Item 5, this is the Central Environmental Laboratory Expansion and Rehab Alternative Project Delivery. The recommended action today is approve the construction management project delivery method for the CEL expansion and rehab project. The commission approved for the new lab, renovated lab, to go get a PER, and that was awarded to CDM Smith in December of 2021. And as they've gone through the PER, one of the things they found is like this is a very complex project. And that's one of the reasons why they want to use this construction, CMAR, construction manager at risk project delivery method, because there's a very intricate phasing related to maintaining lab operations. And there's like 5 reasonings on why it's being defined as a complex project, which is required in Virginia to use the project delivery method. It's also a benefit to have the contractor on board to help us develop the cost estimates. One of the things that I'm concerned about is there are so many different alternatives that they're working on with the lab, you know, maybe a second story, maybe even a third story. And I wanna make sure that we can afford some of those things, but having the contractor on board as they develop these alternatives are gonna be really helpful for us. They're doing very intricate design, even to the point of making sure that when two labs are working together, that the travel time between each lab when they're delivering samples is even short. So they're doing very, very good intricate design. So CDM's doing a great job with that. But we do recommend this project delivery method because again, this is a $30 million plus project, gonna be very complex, and we need to maintain lab operations at the same time. Mm-hmm.
Any questions? Your motion?
Thank you. Taurasi, second. Thank you.
All those in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lakdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taurasi?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elofson?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item 6.
Item 6, this is the Eastern Shore Infrastructure Improvements Transmission Force Main Phase 1. We've got 2 property acquisitions, one from the Eastern Shore Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and another one from the town of Exmoor. The recommended actions today are approve the purchase of property located at 12 and 14 Hartman Avenue, Onancock, Accomack County, Virginia, and associated acquisition cost of $7,000. And approve the acceptance of 2 parcels of real property deeded from the town of Exmoor for no consideration located along Carolyn Street. Both of these properties will be used for pump stations. If you recall, we've got the 20 mile long Eastern Shore Transmission Force Main. These are just 2 pump stations that are going to be built along the Transmission Force Main. Again, one in Onancock and one in Exmoor. Interesting thing about Exmoor is they just, you know, with the recently approved Commonwealth budget, they got $3.5 million to help them with their collection system. So at town of Exmoor, they're going to own and operate their own collection system. And then it'll go into this pump station and pump into the transmission force main. The other one is just a pump station at Hartman Avenue in Onancock. So this is the purchase for those 2 properties.
$7,000?
$7,000. There's another agenda item later on. It's a limited point.
Yeah, it'll offset that. The other one's great.
First. Anyways, move for approval.
Thank you, Commissioner Glenn. Thank you, Commissioner Levinson.
All those in favor say yes. Those against say no. And my roll call, please.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lakdawalla? Levinson?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taurasi?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yeah.
Elofson?
Yes.
Motion carries. Item 7.
Item 7. This is the Jefferson Avenue Interceptor Force Main Replacement Phase 3, the easement acquisition at 12130 Jefferson Avenue in Newport News. The recommended action today is approve the purchase of a 14,418 square foot permanent easement for $170,600 from Target Corporation. So we presented this project a number of times. The reason why it's coming to the commission is this easement acquisition exceeds the $25,000 threshold as defined in our governance guidelines. And if you can see on the map, you can jump to the map. I think you just scroll down, it's on the second page. Yeah, you'll see that easement acquisition for the interceptor in their in the target parking lot. Mm-hmm. And so that's what we need. Definitely not $7,000.
It has a seven in it.
We got the land for 7,000. This is just an east.
Yeah. We don't do that either.
Any questions? Motion to approve.
Thank you, Commissioner Rodriguez.
Secretary Glenn.
Thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn.
Yes.
Lockdawalla.
Yes.
Levingston.
Yes.
Rodriguez.
Yes.
Tarofsky.
Yes.
Templeman.
Yes.
Elison.
Yes. Motion carries. Item 8.
Item 8. This is the Middlesex collection system in Cook's Corner. The subject is additional appropriation and contract award. Recommended actions today are appropriate additional funding in the amount of $2,953,747 and award a contract to Tidewater Utility in the amount of $3,734,750. So this is an interesting project in that if you see the revised total project authorized funding of $4.6 million, that will all be reimbursed to HRSD by Middlesex County. In this project, they got two revitalization grants for the Cook's Corner area. And one of the requirements of those grants is that they have to have sanitary sewer service. So we have this memorandum of agreement with Middlesex County that they will reimburse us for all of these costs. HRSD will own and operate this collection system. And before this contract went out, I even had Robin review the memorandum of agreement just to make sure that it's block solid, it's tight, to make sure that they'll pay us back for this work. Because this project has gone back and forth due to the cost escalation. So at one point they were going to do a low pressure force main with private grinder pumps, and then now it's back to the gravity system. So they had to look hard at, if they want to spend this much money for this area to install sanitary sewer service there. So they did agree. They took a vote, I think, January 17th, maybe a couple of weeks ago, to reaffirm their commitment to pay us back for this work. So now we're bringing it to commission and ready to award the bid. So in terms of the engineer's estimate, it was $2.9 million. Low bid was $3.7 million. Again, due to the same cost escalation factors that we talked about before. This one was specific to the cost of 8-inch gravity sewer pipe.
Again, just two bids.
Yeah.
First, to see the same companies won over these awards are not like you want a new board, but be definitely much more challenging. Personnel wise, are they where they should be with people complete the job?
Tidewater? Yes, they've done a good job for us. They've been able to keep up. And they're being fairly judicious about chasing work. We'll see, though, as things continue to get tight.
I think people need to be a better challenge.
Middlesex is kind of between Richmond and Hampton Road, so it's kind of that tweener area. Sometimes we get C. Walter, C. Baez a little bit further away from us. Sometimes we get Richmond contractors that will bid at some of our work in King William and Middlesex. Sometimes they won't.
It seems to be a little out. They seem to be stretching for this project, but I'm thinking I would have thought you'd get some like Richard. Anyway, that's fine.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn.
Yes.
Lockdawalla.
Yes.
Levingston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Tarofsky?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Elison?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item 9.
Item 9, this is the Mansman Swift facility. Three items today: initial appropriation, alternative project delivery, and task order. So the recommended actions today are appropriate total project funding in the amount of $365,489,400. Approve the design build project delivery method for the Swift facility. and approve a task order with AECOM in the amount of $987,226. There have been a number of projects related to the Nansman facility lately, so this is just one of them. This is the SWIFT project. You saw the nutrient reduction project, wells, and solids handling, all separate projects, but this doesn't even include the Boat Harbor horse main that's coming across parallel to the Monterey Merrimack and the Boat Harbor pump station. So all of these projects coming together to essentially rebuild the Nansman plant. So this project is specifically for the advanced water treatment infrastructure for SWIFT. This SWIFT facility, I believe, is going to be 33 million gallons a day. And so that's the first item is the initial appropriation for the $365 million. The second one is the use of design-build delivery method. We've had great success with design-build, particularly on our treatment plant projects. We're doing that on our James River SWIFT, so we're recommending that same project delivery method here. And then the third piece is the task order to AECOM to develop that basis of design that's needed for design-build before we can select our design builder. So those are the three items. Mm-hmm.
Here, what's the black bar?
The
black bar that we.
I'm not sure what the black border is because it's not property line.
It was taken from another graphic. This is the FNOD boundaries. Commissioner Trosky is showing the area of.
At the ordinance. Yeah, but
it seemed that I didn't have.
Yeah, the ammunition.
Where do you want to take your metal detector?
I don't know what the FNN is, but it's Ordnance Depot, right?
Yeah.
Former
Nansman.
Former Nansman.
Ordnance Depot.
Based on our footprint for our test pilot SWIFT, how much larger are the actual SWIFT facilities than our test facility?
As a percentage standpoint, they're much smaller. So one MGD is our demonstration facility. Right. And that footprint sits in here.
Yeah, that's it.
Here. 33 MGD of SWIFT is going in that area. So it's more traditional tankage. It would look just like a wastewater treatment plant or a water treatment plant. So,
and we get the same thing.
The James River and potentially a bit one day too.
So what's the area that they're roughly?
How many acres?
Good morning, Bruce. This is Lauren.
Go ahead, Lauren.
I can acknowledge that space, the amorphous red shape, is much larger than the actual facility will be. It's a designation of where we expect the design builders to be able to work within for construction based on river boundaries, what we know from leftover from FNOD and water in the area. We're going to actually target that the design builders meet the requirement for efficient space use while they're placing that. We actually very much expect to not use this whole shape. We've just defined it as the area in which they can work. And
How big is that area, Lauren, approximately?
I was going to say, and I don't know the approximate area, but we can get that. Yeah.
If you were to pin me down, I'd say that's maybe 10 acres, 10 to 15 acres, but that's just a guess.
Any other questions? Need a motion?
Are these three separate motions or one motion?
One motion.
One. Move for approval, Glenn.
Thank you.
So again, Director
Lama. Thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Dr. Waller?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Sharofsky?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Ellison?
Yes. Motion carries. Mm-hmm. Item 10.
Item 10. This is Small Community Collection System Rehab Phase 3. It's for an initial appropriation and construction contract award. Recommended actions today are appropriate total project funding in the amount of $1,213,118 and award a contract to Walter C. Via Enterprises in the amount of $1,023,578. And this one's a little bit unique in the sense that it's an initial appropriation going straight to construction contract award. The reason why is for all of this work, all of the design was done in phase one. And there's two, all the construction is going to be done in phases 2 through 5, and this is a phase 3 project. In terms of the work, this was all rehab or replacement projects that were declared a prompt repair. All of this work will be done in West Point and Urbana. And in terms of the bid amount, again, it goes both ways in terms of the engineer's estimate. So in this case, the low bid came at $1 million. Engineer's estimate was twice that, $2 million. Again, the engineer having a tough time overestimating cost escalation factors. The main driver was estimating the cured in place pipe, and that was 45% less than the engineer's estimate. The bid came in. Any questions?
So there's $1.2 million is the authorization, and the contract is $1.23 million.
The total project is $1.2 million. So there's $100,000 of contingency, and then task order to the engineer of $75,000. So.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Second,
thank you.
All in favor say yes. Those opposed say no. By roll call.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lochtewell? Yes. Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Taroski?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Ellison?
Yes.
Thank you.
Motion carries. Item 11.
11. This is our COVID-19 wastewater surveillance study update. And I think today we've got Kyle doing the update today.
Yes, that's right. I'm going to share my screen. Let's see here. Has that come up?
Yeah.
Got it. Yep.
Great. All right. Thanks very much. And good morning, everybody. But just a couple points today. Give you a quick overview of the overall trend and then just a comment about some of the variant testing that is going on in our lab. So the kind of bottom line up front is we kind of just keep seeing a noisy trend. I put in this presentation just a couple days ago that it's been generally down since we had a spike in May, but I just saw the data from this past week and it looks like we're back up a little bit. So no major swings in either direction. I would say we're just kind of still bouncing around the level we've been at for, you know, a few weeks now. And towards the end here on the very last slide, I'll go into some of what's going on with the variant testing. Just to show the familiar figures, you can kind of see we had that spike in early May in the top left of that four panel part. And it, as you can notice, the colors haven't changed a lot, indicating that the viral load in the facilities that we're monitoring haven't really swung wildly up or down. And you'll see that on this plot as well. So similar to the ones we've shown, you know, for the past couple of years now, really, on the top, we have the viral load kind of aggregated for all of our facilities. Something we recently added was just a little text to denote what the dominant variant was for each of the waves we've seen. And like I'm going to mention in this last part, our most recent, I'll say spike, because it's not a clear wave. I've got BA2 as the dominant variant, but we'll see that there's a little bit of a mix, and it's not quite clear right now which one is the most dominant. So this is just a look at sort of our regional load like we usually do. On the bottom, we see the 5-day rolling average for hospitalizations in gray and deaths in red, just to get an indication of how those things track. And so that's kind of where we are with our surveillance. But an interesting thing that's going on that I wanted to point out is we have in the past either developed or ordered assays that are specifically designed to test for a certain variant. And now that, you know, the virus obviously continues to evolve, there are lots of variants either all out there concurrently, or one will become very dominant because, you know, maybe it's more transmissible, or maybe it's different enough than the most recent type that we're all effectively naive to it. And so this information on the top here, this first bullet that says for Virginia, this is clinical data. This is not data HRSD has generated, but I wanted to point out that some subset of the clinical positives get sequenced. So the genetic material is identified. And by doing that, you can tell very specifically which variant you have in that sample. And so if you just kind of look at what's the frequency that we see any of these variants, you can get an idea which one is dominant for a given time. And so I know that's a little bit of a crazy looking chart, but what it really is just showing is for the different variants represented in the different colors, what's the proportion of the sequences that come up for these samples. And all the way over to the right is the most recent data, which for this was the first 2 weeks of June. And what we see is BA2 and then a sublineage of BA2 represent about 80% of the sequences that are seen. So that's that 22C and 21L right here. I know there's a lot of names for all these things. I have to make myself a cheat sheet every time, but that's what those are. Those are BA2 lineages. And then below that, A and B, these 22A and 22B, that's BA4 and BA5. That's almost the remaining 15% of the sequences. And so that's what's going on as far as the clinical surveillance of different variants. This is specific to Virginia, but I would encourage you to go to this site, covariance.org. They do a great job of aggregating data globally, and then it's broken down by state for the US if you want to look into this a little more. But for our lab, we can target a variant and get the concentration of it. So we're not sequencing, at least in this case, but we can pick the variants that we know are likely to be dominant and get an idea of their concentration relative to either the wild type, so the Wuhan strain, or the most recent variant. And what we see is our wastewater data, which are a different sort of a test, corroborate what we see at the state level. So we see BA2 or a sublineage of BA2 being dominant, but BA4 and 5 present and kind of on the rise in terms of their proportion. And so I'll make no claim to say what effect that will have on the outcome, you know, the clinical outcomes, but I wanted to point it out because I think it's interesting work that's going on in our lab. And so that's all I really wanted to go over, but I'm happy to take any questions if y'all have some.
Kyle, are our projections still ahead of the health department, Virginia Health Department?
I would say wastewater in general, from what we've seen and what I've either read or heard other folks that are doing this around the country, they do still see a little bit of an early indication for changes in trend. Well, I'll say the good thing is that now the health department does have people dedicated to looking at wastewater surveillance. So in theory, inside the organization, they should have both the clinical and the wastewater data to be able to look at both.
Good thing.
Sure thing.
Any other questions? Well, thank you very much. No action required on this. So we'll move on to item 12, which is a report from the O&M committee. Willie, the chairman.
The O&M committee met on May 25th, 2022. And again, this morning, we discussed nomination of chair and vice chair for the coming fiscal year, July 1, 2022 through June 30, 2023. Also at the meeting this morning, that reviewed proposed changes to the commission governance guidelines. The proposed changes will be circulated by the commission secretary to all commissioners for review. Please advise the committee or Mrs. Cassio if you have any changes or questions by July 13th. The guidelines will be presented to the full commission at the July 26, 2022 meeting for approval. The remote participation and ethic policy are currently under legal review for legislation changes effective July 1 and will be presented to this committee review in July. The committee poll each commission member for determining their willingness to serve as chair or vice chair, or their recommendations to appoint another commissioner member for these offices. Mr. Chair, the nominating committee submit the following nominations: Steve Rodriguez, chair; vice chair, Gregory Rick Ellison.
Thank you for all of your work. And thank the rest of the commission to participating in that process. So as we are the privileged organization, we get to choose our own leadership. Governor chooses us. So with that, I need a second.
Oh, we don't need a second, but we do need a roll call vote.
Okay. So we'll request a roll call vote approving the
officers as stated.
Okay, the officers as stated.
Glenn?
Yes.
Lockdawalla?
Yes.
Levinston?
Yes.
Rodriguez?
Yes.
Tarosky?
Yes.
Templeman?
Yes.
Ellison?
Yes. Well, I want to thank you for the privilege of being able to be chair for I don't know how many years. It's been fun. And you are going to enjoy this hot seat. So, I think it covers that. Any unfinished business? Right. New business. Right. Commissioner Cummings.
Yeah, I do. Say thank you very much for your leadership over the years. Right. It's been enjoyable. We're glad you're going to be in the second hot seat. Yes.
Yeah.
Share that, Steve. Big congratulations.
Thanks.
Can you come call me too?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you
for all you've done.
Thank you so much.
And I would like to just recognize Bruce and his team. I am a member of the community member on the chair of the Ethnon, former announcement for the depot. And at the last meeting, which was early June, Bruce and his team gave a wonderful presentation to the group about the project that's going to be going through the area that was just on display a few minutes ago. And I received several comments after that that it was really well presented and clear. And I, throughout the years, have seen several presentations and the clarity it's not always as evident as it was. Thank you.
And we are blessed with a very good team that works well together, Jay. Keep that going. All right. Any other commissioner comments?
I did mention to Jay, and I just wanted for everyone, I was reviewing the photos and everything of the United Way House in Littlesburg.
Oh, yeah.
What a great job that was. Mm-hmm. A way to come together, teamwork, unbelievable.
Is it?
So, yeah. Very, very much appreciated. Many thanks to the employees who participated.
Any other comments? Hearing none, we will move to our public comment. We have one registered. Well, thank in advance for taking the time to share your concerns with the commission. And for the record, when Ms. Cascio calls your name, please begin your remarks by stating your name. Please try to limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just going to recognize Jonathan Harris. He's from Gloucester, Virginia. He is on the call. Mr. Harris, can you hear us?
Yes, I can. Can y'all hear me?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. So I'm just speaking out today about HRSD reached out to me about building a pump station on my property, 9316 John Clayton Memorial Highway, Gloucester, Virginia, tax map 26-22P for the Middlesex PS and IFM project. HRSD and I negotiated on a price, and I was sent an intent to purchase agreement from HRSD. A few weeks later, the project manager came back and said that the Gloucester County was not letting HRSD subdivide my 5 acres in a way that was suitable for the building requirements of the project. So the project manager said that HRSD was no longer interested in my property for the build. I personally then went and talked to the county and was told that there are potential waivers that can be submitted in other ways around the constraints of the county to make it suitable and cost effective for the build to still take place on the portion of property that HRSD would purchase from me. I am asking that the commission take more time working with the county and myself so that the pump station can still be built on my property. I have been told that this has been an incredibly difficult task trying to locate a suitable location for this build, and I would like to work with HRSD in every way that I can to make this build possible. Some options include working with the county to get these waivers passed through so that the build can take place in a way that is suitable for HRSD's build infrastructure requirements. Picking a different area on the property to build the pump station. I have spoken with the county and there are no setback requirements for the intended use since it is not residential. Making it easier to build on. The project manager and I just looked at one portion of the property and in hindsight was not the best location on the 5 acres that I intended because there are potentially better areas for the build. Another option is renegotiating on a price that will keep the building costs reasonable. And lastly, potentially selling all 5 acres that I own to HRSD so that the build can take place anywhere on the property without the constraints of the county. In closing, the county has stated they are willing to work with us, and I believe with more work and planning, we can make this build happen on 9316 John Clayton Memorial Highway so that HRSD can finally nail down a successful place to build this pump station. I ask that HRSD take into consideration the options I have outlined today. I look forward in hearing back on the matter. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Harris. We appreciate your comments and our staff will take it under advisement.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, we can move on to information items. Any questions on the various reports that were submitted? Hearing none. Next commission meeting is going to be July 26th, 2022. Guess where? New floor news. Welcome, new chair. Meeting's adjourned. Get that. Get that.